Welcome to this week's edition of The Green on Deadwood Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. As part of our 2022 election coverage, Delaware Public Media is highlighting a series of races to watch, beginning with races in the upcoming September primary. We start in Kent County, where an incumbent Republican state senator faces not one, but two primary challengers. The state senator is Colin Bonini, and the district is the Senate 16th, which reaches from South Dover down to just north of Milford. Delaware Public Media's Paul Kiefer has more on this three-way race.
State Senator Colin Bonini leans into incumbency. Over nearly three decades in the General Assembly, and two runs for governor, the Kent County Republican has staked out a clear role for himself as one of Delaware's most vocal conservatives. And he isn't shy about claiming that title for himself.
You know, if you say who's the spokesperson for the right side of the political spectrum in Delaware politics, I would argue that's been me for 25 years.
Both on and off the Senate floor, he speaks at breakneck speed, sometimes taking on a pleading tone to get a point across. He will use arcane procedural rules to stall a vote on a bill he opposes until midnight, only to invite an exhausted colleague on the other side of the aisle to visit his 10-acre horse farm. He makes a point of voting against the annual budget every year. More than practically anyone else in the legislature, Colin Bonini is a known quantity. But despite, or possibly because of, his long-standing and well-defined role in Delaware Senate, Bonini is not running unopposed in the upcoming 16th District Republican primary. Eric Buxton, a longtime Kent County Levy Court Commissioner and the son of former Lieutenant Governor and State Attorney General David Buxton, is a familiar figure in the 16th District. And Kim Petters, an Air Force veteran and the co-founder of the gun rights-focused Women's Defense Coalition of Delaware, is a first-time candidate. Both challengers take issue with some aspect of Bonini's long tenure. For Petters, that issue is face-to-face voter outreach and organizing, which she says needs to be done more consistently across the district.
Most of the doors I've knocked, I'm being told I'm the first person to ever show up at their door. So, you know, there seems to be a breakdown in communication between our representation, our Senate representation, and constituents.
For Buxton, the issue is Bonini's nearly three-decade-long run in the Senate itself. Buxton has made term limits for lawmakers a central talking point in his campaign. He has also promised to give up his seat on the levy court regardless of how he fares in the Senate primary.
Democracy was not designed around career politicians, no matter how well-intended I am, we are, they are. I just don't think that's the way the system was designed to work. I would argue that we need to change out. We need the messengers to change. I have a very strong conservative background. I am not going to flip over and change my stripes when I get there. But I just believe if we want to better convey our positions and have a better chance to win arguments, I know it'll be difficult, but I want my turn. I want a chance. I want to be able to represent the folks in my district and get in that fight.
But in conversations with the three candidates, a more fundamental difference between the incumbent and his challengers becomes clear. When asked about his record as a lawmaker, Bonini says assessing his time in the legislature through bills he's supported misses the point.
Because you're going to say, well, what specifically are you doing? But I don't really see that as my role, right? I mean, I'd be like, well, if you're the minority, you're not going to be like, well, I did this bill and I did that bill. And that's just not who I am. I mean, I'm up there fighting for traditional values and conservative principles.
Bonini sees himself as a bulwark against perceived government overreach. And he's generally skeptical of the capacity of new legislation or government programs to offer any value to Delaware residents. Instead, he asks to focus on his role as the kind of senator who stops or challenges legislation and spending he finds objectionable.
I mean, I personally stopped the first statewide ever property tax in Delaware. Me.
He's referring to a statewide outreach campaign he launched in 2019 to raise opposition to a bill before the state Senate that would have created a property tax to fund Delaware Technical Community College. In his view, though the initial proposed tax was low, the bill opened the door for tax increases in the future. As a longtime member of the Senate's Capital Improvement Committee, Bonini casts himself as the Senate's resident fiscal watchdog, steering public infrastructure dollars to where he believes they will be best spent, including bread-and-butter transportation projects like highway overpasses, while remaining vocally skeptical of the size of the state's budget and the value of government interventions. But neither of his primary challengers are as quick to focus attention on what legislation and spending they would oppose. Instead, Petters says she could leverage her experience as a gun rights organizer to help bills sponsored by Senate Republicans fare better in the General Assembly. She also points out that the handful of bills sponsored by Bonini in the most recent legislative session, including a proposal to roll back recent reforms of Delaware's bail system, never made it to the governor's desk.
Because we're the minority party, more has to be done than just drafting legislation that ultimately will fail. 8 pieces of legislation that he did draft, that he did prime sponsor, did fail. And the reason is because there was no campaign launched behind the issue ahead of time. There was no rallying the community.
Petters argues that even as an activist, she's been able to rally enough support behind faltering bills to get them to the finish line. She points to the so-called Bravery Bill, a 2017 proposal that expanded medical marijuana access for veterans with PTSD.
And that legislation died on the Senate floor. But I didn't take that as an answer. And so what I did is I went up and down the state talking to all the different veteran orgs I could possibly talk to. I went into the VFW, the American Legion, the DAB, the hunting veteran groups, the women veteran groups. And together, by rallying the community, the veteran community, we were able to bring that bill back and get it to pass unanimously.
Petters also believes that the presence of a woman in the Senate's Republican caucus could give a boost to conservative causes, particularly when the General Assembly is debating gun access.
Right now, there are no women Republican senators. There are no women senators standing up explaining why women's rights, why gun rights are women's rights.
Meanwhile, Buxton points to a decades-old battle over the construction of exurban housing developments on converted farmland as a key reason for his involvement in Kent County politics.
What happened around that time, 2006-07, we were just, some could say at the end, some could say still in the middle of the growth phase. Residential growth was being left unchecked. It was under codes and laws that, as I reviewed them, were not in balance with the communities. They were more tilted towards just build and go. And that was evidenced by the lack of infrastructure that was required in some of these approvals. And I faced pushback from the existing levy court when I presented those concerns.
As Buxton tells it, he stepped in to advocate for additional regulation on rural housing development. Specifically, Buxton took issue with developments on lots that weren't already outfitted with the water, sewage, or road infrastructure to support a new exurban neighborhood.
The reason you're having these pop-up developments in the middle of our best farmland is because that's where it's the least expensive to build. The problem with that is it's most expensive to service.
He led a successful push to add additional infrastructure requirements for rural housing developments. Restrictions, he says, may not yet be fully apparent, because many of the newly constructed housing developments on former farmland were given permits before the new rules took effect. Today, Buxton sees another opportunity for intervention in the housing market, this time to mitigate the damage of rising housing costs.
The biggest problem we have right now is that the rent market is out of control and there's nowhere for people to turn. I understand the free market, but I also understand that we don't have to build affordable housing. What we need to do is try to make housing affordable by assisting qualified homeowners or renters in getting into a home. One of the biggest obstacles, down payment.
On the levy court, Buxton advocated for the county to use American Rescue Plan Act dollars to assist qualified homeowners and renters in covering down payments or rental deposits. That effort was not successful. Like nearly all other conservative elected officials in Delaware, he opposes additional tenant protections, including recently failed proposals to provide legal representation to tenants facing eviction, but sees financial assistance for renters and homebuyers as an appropriate government intervention in the housing crisis. Bonini's core proposal for remedying Delaware's housing crisis is consistent with his skepticism towards the state government in general.
And so I do think the government has been government is quite frankly partially to blame, if not a significant portion of blaming why we have such a housing crisis, is that the market is telling us one thing and the government is trying to shape that market, and that just doesn't work.
But his general willingness to criticize zoning and building code rules he calls Byzantine doesn't necessarily mean he supports more radical measures like eliminating single-family home zoning statewide. Instead, he thinks Delaware state government should leave building regulations to municipalities, though much of the support for the kinds of zoning restrictions he opposes comes from the local level. But in a race challenging a long-standing Republican voice at Legge Hall, these granular differences between candidates over the role they believe state government should play in problem solving may be an afterthought. The candidates in the 16th District Republican primary would likely cast identical votes when the partisan battle lines are clearly drawn, perhaps more than in any other primary. The race is a referendum on whether the Senate's most recognizable conservative has become too comfortable in that role. Paul Kiefer, Delaware Public Media.
Thanks, Paul. The winner of this GOP primary on Tuesday, September 13th, will run unopposed in November's general election. No Democrat or other candidates have filed to run for the seat in the Senate's 16th district. And we continue our Races to Watch series in a moment with a look at the GOP primary in a newly created district in Sussex County. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media.